Welcome back to the Hoops Temple Podcast. Y'all know me, Nathan Schwartz. Joining me from Sacramento, Aaron Schroeder.
Good to see you guys. New NBA season. Happy to be here.
And join us from New Zealand, Dylan Williamson.
Good morning. Now we finally have to see whether we were incredibly wrong about everything.
No, we were not. We were incredibly right about everything. If the playoffs began today, we have basically the right playoffs and lottery teams for the Western Conference. Like, once we made that adjustment, we said, all right, Memphis is out. But after the Steven Adams thing, we have the perfect five lottery teams.
Stop the count.
Stop the count.
Not quite the right orders on everyone, but like Dallas and New Orleans slipped into the playoffs. We had them in the play-in, but other than that, you know, we're rock solid for our Western Conference predictions. We're right. That's what we've learned.
Awesome.
Have we ever been wrong?
No, I don't think so.
I can't remember.
Yeah, our top 100 was flawless last year as well.
Mm-hmm.
And our top 30 for the playoffs, and our top 200 of all time. Mm-hmm. I'm 90% sure we've never made a mistake, and I just put that 90% out there because I know it's possible.
I should go back and look at our top 100 from last year and to see who fell out completely. I'm guessing it's mostly guys in the 90s, but if there's any like just total whiffs.
Yeah. I mean, we didn't have Lauri Markkanen for last season.
That's fair.
A lot of people didn't. He wasn't on the Washington Post. He wasn't on ESPN's. He wasn't on a lot of people's. So
it was a meteoric rise for him.
It's way exactly. easier to get that wrong, to get like, you know, the random superstar explosion. Like, who would see that coming? But the more common mistake would be good players that just aren't good anymore, just all of a sudden. So I'll go back next time.
Speaking of things we've got wrong, that is kind of the theme of this podcast today. We are going with the I thought blank, but now I think blank. Or moreover, gentlemen, do you want to start on the positive sides or the negative sides of things?
What's more fun than the negative sides?
Okay.
Haters only blank. Pod.
I thought blank would be disappointing, but they're even more disappointing. Who you got for me, gentlemen?
Dylan, would you like to start?
No, you take it.
All right.
You're the negative guy.
What? Is that my label all of a sudden?
Aaron, you legitimately put in our group chat multiple times. Being a Kings fan isn't about liking the Kings. It's about hating everyone else.
Exactly. I think that's the center of being a sports fan is, honestly, it's not about rooting for your team. It's about hating other teams. There's way more teams to hate. It's easier to hate a bunch of teams than like one team. My disappointing team is going to be Toronto. I had talked about their offense in the offseason, and without Van Fleet, what that would look like. It looks really rough. Against the Sixers was really tough yesterday. They just don't have any scoring options. And you guys were right defensively. They had the sixth best defense. They have tons of length, and they're super fun in that way. Right now, 29th best offense. They're scoring at just a prehistoric pace. They don't have the shooting or the driving ability. It's just, I think it's going to be a... I still think they're going to land about bottom 10 offense, bottom 10 defense, like we said, but it's going to be a slow, slow chug to 36 wins.
Man, I actually really like what I saw from them. I thought Scotty Barnes, well, so I watched their other game, and I thought Scotty Barnes is starting to show that he can be the focal point of the offense. He can try to do some stuff. Yeah, it's a bit raw, but I think there is some positives there for that. It's time for them to get rid of Pascal and just fully turn over, as opposed to being this middling franchise like Chicago, who I'm sure someone will bring up soon. But I don't know. I think that they have moments where they looked really good. The Philadelphia game was rough. Their shooters were not hitting aside from Grady Dick. But who do I watch them play?
Man, the Bulls are a good pick. I honestly could have gone with them pretty easily.
But the trouble with the Bulls is, isn't this what we expected, though?
I had them better than the Raptors, though. I probably should have gone that direction. Are you going to go that direction, Dylan?
No, I'm going to go with Miami, who is, what are they, 1-2 so far this season? And Aaron, you missed it, but on the last podcast, in the post-production meeting that Nate and I have, you know, every week to discuss the flawless nature of our podcast, I was saying that like the one team that I think I would want to readjust, although I may have been wrong on, was the Heat. But they've come out and been just as terrible as what we all sort of thought they would be. One of the worst offenses, you know, just painful to watch. In the same way that you're talking about Miami, no one's making shots. And It was quite a hot take from us, I think, to have the Heat as a, what is it, like 40-win team. But I think that could actually, it's looking like it's going to come to fruition based on this incredibly huge sample size.
They beat the Pistons by 1 point and didn't score a field goal in the final 3 minutes of the game or final 2:45 of that game. And now, like, Butler is already needing to rest. They don't have anything as far as depths go. It was like, they came out and said, hey, we have a deeper team than last year. And we kind of looked at them like, oh, yeah, maybe. But they're just already dealing with some injuries. Like, Caleb Martin has knee tendonitis. Love had, is a thing that took him out. They started Jaime Jaquez Jr. and Nikola Jovic. Like, that is rough to be starting those guys this early in the year. And it's not like they're starting them because they broke out and looked really good. They're starting them because that's who they have to start right now.
Yeah, and we did have questions about their depth, and one of the ways that depth is really exposed is when you do have those injuries, or, you know, your best player needs to take a rest after playing 2.5 games, because you get that effect of now your 10th man is your 6th man, and now your 13th man is your 10th man, and you get, like, big diminishing returns there.
In Jimmy Butler's defense, Cade Cunningham just bodied him. He just can't handle the big guard, Cade.
Cade looks good, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later. But yeah. Miami, I hate them, and I've grown to hate them because I've dug my heels into this take. I did an Eastern Conference preview with Pablo Escobar and Montaigne, and that was our biggest point of contention, was the Heat being below the Pacers and the Magic, and I felt really strongly about that. Like, maybe the playoffs are a different story, but they will have better regular seasons. This Heat team is just, they have nothing left there. They've been stripped of their offensive talent over the offseason, and mm-hmm. they were a bottom five offense in last year, and I think it's going to get worse this year. Like the Heat always do, obviously watching them, they have guys you've never heard of before playing pretty good defense and hitting threes, but that's just,
I had to look up Drew Smith. Level.
Yeah, I added him in a fantasy league because I'm like, I think this guy's actually going to play a bunch.
He will. No, I mean, Killian Hayes and Kate, like, Killian Hayes was giving in Kyle Lowry work. He was getting the free throw line jumper whenever he wanted it. Just, you know, hey, two steps past you, I've got you on my back hip, let me shoot it. Now, he wasn't making them because he's Killian Hayes, but, like, I'm sorry, Kyle Lowry, if you're getting burned by Killian Hayes repeatedly, Drew Smith is going to have to play a lot at that point guard slot.
Two pretty big losses for them to start the season. Well, they won the first game by 1. They lost by 8. And they lost by 16. The 8-point loss to the Celtics, I count as a 20-point loss because it's like automatic plus 10 versus Boston. they should start the game up 10-0 against the Celtics. That's just how it feels. Like, they have a special potion they drink that makes them better against players wearing green. So that if that's their supercharged Celtics game and it still end up in a loss, and the Minnesota game was pretty ugly without Butler, Gobert demolished them on the boards, and it seemed like energized defensively, and they just they couldn't stay in front of Naz Reid, and it was rough.
They couldn't stay in front of Beef Stew.
Like, Beef Stew.
Marvin Bagley get out in the game, and like first couple of minutes there, he swats the hell out of some poor Heat player. Like, they don't have, I mean, Kevin Love looks real old. He did trick Jalen Duren at one point and just kind of moved off the ball, and Duren's like, where did he go? But, like, their front court is real rough because it's basically, bam, whatever Kevin Love can give you, and then that's it. Thomas Bryant had a moment, and, like, if you're counting on Thomas Bryant moments, you're in bad place. I think this is absolutely a great call for a team we were low on, and we're still disappointed by the play. I'm keeping us in the Eastern Conference. I'm moving from team and going to player. We were all down. We were all expected to be disappointed by Julius Randle. Multi-time All-NBA forward Julius Randle, but it has been so much worse than I expected. Like, his last game was 8 turnovers and 4 for 15 shooting. The first game, 5 for 22 shooting. Just absolutely insanely brutal offense. And, like, he doesn't know what he's doing defensively. It's not like there's this making up for being bad on offense with really good defense. It's just even worse on that end.
Is that like 28% shooting for the season?
He had a decent middle game where he shot 40%. But yeah, you're right. 27.7%. Yeah.
Man.
13.7 points. You know, still like 12 boards and 7 assists. So it's not like all of the numbers are bad, but
The shooting splits good. Are bad enough where you could toss out kind of the rest and just make this just kind of overall rough. I'm sure he'll get it going. I don't think he's going to finish the season shooting 20%. I know it's not a hot take, but yeah, I mean, it's Julius. I think we knew that Randle was hurt in the playoffs last year. And like, okay, that's probably why he's playing so poorly. But this is like, he's a wrecking ball in a bad way. Like a wrecking ball through a kindergarten. You just close your eyes and it's just because it's not happening.
Oh no, save the children! Seriously. The children!
It's hard to watch. The shots he generates are not great. Even good scorers wouldn't be happy with the shots he is getting looks at.
Yeah. And part of that is teams know that he's not good at shooting. And so they kind of let him have it. And like, that's not a good sign. It's not like this is Kevin Durant having an off couple of shooting nights where teams are still 100% locked in on you and throwing the double. This is Julius Randle who's having bad shooting nights. And teams are like, cool, we're not sending additional help your way.
We maybe should have expected this because it's been a trend throughout Julius Randle's Knicks career that every second year he's just really bad. And he had a pretty good season last year, like made All-NBA again. I don't think we picked him for our team, but he made it nonetheless. But yeah, every second year, he just is abysmal for some reason.
It's the, I talked about the Harrison Barnes equilibrium after his huge 33-point game. I had texted some people and said, I'll bet my life savings that he's under 12 points next game, and he scored 10. It's like that, but it's an entire season's worth where it's a much longer pendulum that swings back and forth.
But hey, my RJ Barrett stock is rising and I'm happy about this. I got him in fantasy, so that at least worked out well for me.
Can we touch on the Bulls?
Yeah,
we didn't pick them for a disappointing team, but have you guys ever seen a players only meeting after one game?
So there was another players only meeting that happened this year, and it happened before the first game, and it was with Boston Celtics trying to decide who's going to start. The six starters got together for a players-only meeting and apparently told Joe Mazzulla, which I thought that was funny because that's leadership in a good way. That's a players' meeting in a good way. And no, I don't think I've ever seen a players-only meeting in a bad way like what we just saw with Chicago.
I mean, it's just an awful loss to start. They get drubbed by the Thunder. They lost to the Pistons last night. LaVine had a 50-point game, but zero assists, which is just really strange to watch.
It's the most Zach LaVine stat line possible. 50 points, zero assists, and the loss. 50 points, zero assists, and a double-digit loss to a lottery team.
He scored 20.
While you guys talk, I'm going to check and see if Carmelo Anthony ever did that. Because that feels like a Carmelo line, but I don't even think Carmelo was able to put up 50 with zero assists.
I feel like I've heard of that before, like the 50-piece zero assist night, so I can't think of who did it. It's just crazy looking at graphic. LaVine's.
See if you can find that night.
Yeah. Looking at LaVine's averages for the year, it's just so, like, if I told you someone averaging 25 points and one assist on 41% shooting had a 50-point night, I don't know, that's just such a strange stat line to look at. But to lose that badly and then meet without Billy Donovan... And the Bulls' leadership's never going to make a midseason coaching change, even though they should. They're just so slow to fire their below-average coaches. Bad rebounding, bad defense, poor scoring, not great.
All right, so the question is not, did Carmelo Anthony do that? The question is, how many times did Carmelo score more than 50 without giving out one assist?
No way.
Do you want to venture a guess?
Is it four? Like four times? Three times? I'll go three.
There's no way he had four or more 50.0 assist games. I'll take the under.
In context, he has had four 50-point games or more in his career, of which two are zero assists.
That's one crazy.
50 points, zero assists, 11 rebounds, four turnovers, three blocks, decent all around. The other night, 62 points, 13 rebounds, zero assists, zero steals, zero blocks. Zero turnovers.
I miss Melo.
He did nothing but shoot.
Put Carmelo back in the league. We need him.
It's not the moment.
That is incredible.
Efficient night, too. Only 35 shots.
Does it have the game scores with those?
Game score 50.6 plus 34. This was January 24th of 2014. Against the Charlotte Bobcats.
Is this the one where he takes only jumpers? Like the jumpers only Carmelo 50-piece? Have you guys seen that?
I gotta imagine with this many rebounds, although only one was an offensive rebound. Maybe it was. I was gonna say with that many rebounds, he had to look out like a tip back or something. But no, this Levine game, when I saw that he had 51 and the Bulls had 102 and they lost to the Pistons, like, I've enjoyed what I've seen from the Pistons, but they still look rough at times. They still seem to be like a second too late with their passing, with their ball movement. There's been a lot of really good progress just for the Pistons, but I still don't think they're there. I think they've kind of beat up on some other matchups that I think we might have been too high on. But to drop 50 against them and still lose by 16 points, Chicago has to be an absolute tailspin and just needs to blow it up right now. Like, don't wait till the deadline. Just do it now.
I'm looking at that 50-point game before you get too far away from it. I'm looking at the, oh, what's it called? Like, the graphic where it shows where they are on the court. Yeah, shot chart. He takes nothing around the rim, nothing around the free throw line. Like, it's all, nothing at the top of the key, nothing at the top of the three-point line. Like, it's all in, like, the mellow arc around, like,
efficient places possible.
Yeah. He hit 5 threes, but it's all 2-point jumpers.
Wait, for the 62-point one or the 50-point one?
This is 50 points against the Heat.
Okay. So I got the 62-pointer pulled up, and he has two things at the rim, but everything else is, yeah, in that mid-range to 3-point range.
That's insane. I miss that era, man. Bring it what back. An incredible bring, up, player. Bring back mid-range and post-ups. What happened to the game that I love?
It got more efficient?
Ruined it. Killed it.
Is it bad that I feel like that would be a very entertaining game to watch?
Okay, the one thing I miss most about that era is like the random, not random, but the scheduled post up for your shitty center that you had to give him at the beginning of the game. So he worked hard. So he rebounded or something.
Let's run a play for Brendan Haywood. Let's, Sangata Job needs a shot.
I call it the Kendrick Perkins post up, because even with KD on the fucking team, they still gave him like 3 post ups a game for some ungodly reason.
When the Clippers kidnapped DeAndre Jordan to convince him to come back, one of the conditions was that they had to give him some post ups. And so you had Chris Paul and Blake Griffin on the court. You had JJ Redick shooting 50% from 3 coming off pin downs, and we're running post ups for DeAndre Jordan to miss hook shots.
I miss it.
Guys, I think we've lost the plot here. We've gone too far into the disappointment. We need to bring it back. We're disappointed in Chicago. We're disappointed in the Knicks. We're disappointed in Toronto.
The state of the league.
We only have talked about the Eastern Conference thus far.
Mid-range games.
What has happened to basketball? I want to touch on the Bulls just one more time. I think in terms of the worst futures, the Bulls are often brought up, but you just got to see what they can get for these pieces, because as it stands, it's not great. But if you can sell each of those guys for a first and a half or a first and a young player or something, like, eventually there's going to be the post on Twitter where it's like, the Bulls turn all of this into all of that bright future in Chicago. Like, that's coming. Just have to see what they're able to net.
Yeah,
it will not be more than what they gave up.
Oh, certainly, but it'll be better than what they have now,
given just the luck of the Lakers. Like, there's no shot that DeMar doesn't end up on the Lakers for like one first round pick.
I think it's a good first round pick
to get.
That's a good value to be, you know, because how old is DeMar DeRozan now? Is he 34? 30, yeah, he's 34, because he's same draft class as Steph, but he's about a year younger. I remember seeing that.
Plus, we know the only person that's ever beaten DeMar in a playoff series is LeBron James. There's no evidence. He's never lost anybody but LeBron James. So if he's with LeBron James, he'll win. And we're just going to ignore the fact that he lost in Chicago with San Antonio. Those series didn't happen. It's only losses to LeBron.
It's like Pem's last. Cancels out. That's what the Lakers need. A true playoff player. A playoff scorer. DeMar DeRozan.
Yeah. Clutch player of the year by proxy 2 years ago. They didn't have the award, but we know it was him.
They invented the award just to, because they were like, we should have given something to DeMar.
All right. Can we move to a slightly more positive section now? All right. I thought blank would be disappointing, but they're actually kind of good. Who you got for me?
Dylan's up first this time.
I'm going to take the slightly unique perspective and make it Wemby's offense. Hmm. We discussed Wembanyama at length in previous shows and talked about how we thought that he'd be an immediate defensive impact, but more of like a sort of low teens inefficient scorer. But the Spurs have kind of just like straight out of the gate given him the ball and the keys to the offense, and he's been pretty efficient with it. And so the thing that I thought was going to be disappointing, but I was pleasantly surprising, is Wemby's scoring.
He had some turnovers that were kind of ugly to see. I think when he does it, it's like, oh my God, because he's like just huge and flying through the air. They are able to get him the ball right around the basket, like more than I thought they'd be willing to do that. And it's when he's down there, it's just, it's terrifying. He can hit these like mini mid-range jumpers that he's just kind of throwing the ball like just directly straight down, just right into the hoop. It looks pretty good. And he's able to get by basically anybody and get over anyone else.
Yeah. You know, the thing that I think we all kind of thought with Wemby was that he has all of these different skills. And we got a little bit distracted from the fact that, like, big people can score the basketball kind of easily sometimes. Like, when he's just running in transition, San Antonio has been pretty good at finding him with the lob or finding him near the basket. And he can finish. And he's, you know, going to get some of those easy buckets that a 6'7" player is not just going to, like, fall backwards into. And so when you have those kind of boosting up your efficiency, you can feel a little bit better taking some shots. I feel like he's rushed a lot of the threes when I've watched him play. He hasn't quite got his feet set. But once he, you know, settles down a little bit, I think that offense is even going to take off even farther. So we forgot about the easy points, and that I think is pulling him up.
He's like the best lob threat in the league already, just because you can throw that anywhere. And the timing doesn't even have to be that great, because he can grab it from way above the rim or from like under the rim or from anywhere. And his dunking ability is just crazy, because he had that one dunk against Houston where he came from just like the other side of the basket and jumped and just kind of wrapped it around and dunked it. And he's the only person in the league who could have dunked that basketball. So that's a whole level of scoring that he's already really good at.
What I was saying is that he's such a good lob threat that like he doesn't even have a point guard. Like Jeremy Sochan's his point guard and he's still crushing lobs.
Dude, him and Sochan though, there's so much wingspan. That lineup, hit the two of them, Collins, like I love it. I think it's my favorite starting lineup of basketball. And I'm going to have some trouble not watching every Spurs game. Like I want to.
Yeah, they got the Clippers in a couple hours, so we'll definitely be tuning in for that.
For sure.
Got to speed this up. So I know we also have Lakers Kings game, so Aaron, you're going
that's
down.
That's true. My brother and my dad are going to that game.
Nice.
Very exciting. Yeah, I'll just say now, by the time they hear this pod, great win, guys. Glad we beat the Lakers. The Lakers are disappointing. We'll talk about them later, and I'll use that prediction to talk about how bad they've been. Yeah, the Kings beat them by 40. Just a tough start to the season. You know, really hope LeBron wouldn't have to play 48 minutes in a 40-point loss, but he did. It's incredible at his age.
Hey, he's on a 30-minute limit, okay? He's only getting 30 minutes.
Yeah, I love how they said that.
Do you want to record a secondary prediction so I can delete whichever one's wrong?
No, I'm good. I'm single. Oh,
you're that confident.
There's no shot.
I do love how...
There's no shot he's wrong.
I love how Darvin Ham said, like, no, like, LeBron playing, like, 30 minutes is about right, and he put, like, 38 the next game. It's like, this is... Mm-hmm. No, he's not, like, don't... Why, like, what's the charade for? Like, just say, like, yeah, he played low minutes, he's old.
Give him 28 to 30 minutes.
Plan. Yeah. You know, 29 minutes to 40 minutes. You know, whatever we feel like. Come on. Okay.
Did you hear LeBron said that he can play point guard? He's like, hey, just a reminder, guys, like, I can play point guard. Like, we don't need to play D'Angelo Russell.
I love that was immediately followed by him like explaining to D'Angelo Russell the concept of like a mismatch, and then D'Angelo Russell just taking a contested step back three anyway.
He's been tough.
Yeah. All right, Aaron, you got someone that you expected to be disappointed but have been pleasantly surprised by?
I'll keep it team themed just because I focused so much on the standings preseason, but I loved the Pistons, and I won't get too caught up in a 2-1 start, but I predicted them to be a 15th seed, and then I was like, okay, 14th seed, fine. I don't think they're going to be that bad at all. I think a play-in push is totally in the cards. Maybe it's a 10 or 9 or 10 seed, but they're a little bit ahead of schedule, more than I thought. So the three things I notice is Cade is doing great to start the season. I anticipate a little bit of a ramp up, but he seems comfortable with his shot and comfortable in passing. He's just huge. I forgot how big he is. Like he's just a big ass guard.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Duren looks fantastic. He's 19. He's like 15 boards a game already. League high so far in the short season. He's super athletic. He works his ass off. And they have one of the best centers in the league already. And then the Thompson twin. He's like the best defensive guard in the league. Like right now. He's insane to watch. And he also, I think he leads all rookies in rebounding. He tries his ass off. He works really hard. And it's just awesome to watch him play defense. I like shed a tear watching him. It was like Ben Wallace and Billups again, dude. It was fucking crazy. I haven't watched good Pistons basketball in my lifetime. Like they haven't been, last time they were good, I was 7 years old.
I mean, that's fair. They have not been good for a while.
It was awesome. Like Pistons defense, dude. Like it's just fun to watch.
Yeah. The Pistons were actually my pick on this as well. I was kind of debating on, was I actually higher on them and I'm slightly disappointed, or was I too low? And I checked my standings again. I did give them pretty low standings. What I was kind of thinking was they weren't quite going to make the leap this year to being that like knock on the door of the play-in team. I thought this year was going to be maybe high 20s, low 30s type. And the next year could be like the 35 to 40 win. We're like, hey, maybe we're a play-in team. Let's start getting excited. And I think that there's no reason why they can't be that mid 30, maybe 33 to 36 win team this year with just how they've performed. That Miami game, I just went and pulled up the total numbers. They had 13 total blocks in that game. Like it was just a beatdown of like, you come in the lane and we block your shot. Jimmy Butler got blocked twice by the Thompson twin. Did Detroit recover any of these blocks and get points off of them in transition? I think like once out of the 13, but they're getting there. They're getting the blocks. Like Marvin Bagley has chased down block, and I know that he immediately recovered and laid it in afterwards. But like, I appreciate the fact that you have to think twice before going up at the rim against Detroit this year. I've been debating about which Pistons game I want to go to because right now tickets to go see the Spurs play them are really cheap, but I'm not sure that I want to spend money and then risk the Wimby injury in a couple of months. I'm like, I might just keep an eye out. And any day that there's like a cheap game, just buy that, drive out to Detroit. Like it's an hour and a half drive from where I live to the stadium. So like, it's not like just a random thing to do, but I might just do that because they've been really fun to watch.
They must be one of the top league fast teams at the moment, which I didn't really expect. Like I thought it might be kind of painful again, but they're definitely like can't miss games.
I could watch Asar Thompson play defense all day, man. Like it's crazy. You can't screen him. Like no one can screen him. He just slips under it somehow, and he moves his feet faster than anyone else. I know LaVine gave him 51, but you know 51 in the team scored as a whole, like it was 102. That's fine. Like you take that.
He took off his passing lanes. You couldn't pass him life. I will say that their rookie guard Marcus Sasser, they list him at 6'2". The man is 5'9". I watch him. He is so small out there. I'm like, and maybe that's just because the rest of their guards are huge.
Classic boy math.
Yeah. But I mean, maybe it's just the rest of the guards are huge. Like Killian is what, 6'5", 6'6". Cade is 6'5", 6'6". The Ivy's is up there. But like, he just looks really small out there compared to everyone else. But nice shot. So be a good fit. All right. Back to the disappointments of everything. I thought they would be good, but they suck. Who do we have? Actually, you know what? I'm just going to jump straight into this. The Lakers trying to score the ball without LeBron James. I thought they would be good, but they suck at it. Like,
man, that's what I was going to say.
I really thought that, hey, you've got Christian Wood, you've got Taurean Prince, you've got Austin Reeves, D'Angelo Russell, and Anthony Davis. How can that five not be a productive offensive unit when LeBron's on the bench? But they haven't been. It's been rough watching in this team play to be still so dependent on LeBron. And I think part of that's coaching. I think part of that is the system is built so much around LeBron, which, you know, makes sense and probably is a good long-term thing. But you got to have like a secondary offense for when he's off the court, because it completely falls apart when he's not there.
We've already run our course. We've seen every single storyline come to fruition after 1 week. D'Angelo Russell has been terrible. The stats won't tell you that, but you got to watch him make awful decisions in game. We've already gotten the Anthony Davis disappearing act, 0-for-6 in the second half versus Denver. We've gotten the LeBron stuff that we usually do. I just felt like the Lakers are like when is LeBron not going to have to carry this team? Like, when is it going to happen? Is it this season? And it really felt like this was the season. It was going to be Davis. He was awesome last year. He's going to take over. We brought in all these guys that can carry some offensive load like a Christian Wood. And like, here it is. And it's like, nope. Like, as soon as LeBron touches that bench, they are getting blown out per 100. I'd have to check the cleaning the glass stuff. Maybe I'll do that after this little speech. But that's kind of how it's been. Every time LeBron's out, they cannot score the ball.
Yeah. And my thought coming into this was maybe we once again went too early on Anthony Davis is better than LeBron. We put Davis in our top team. We had LeBron on the outside looking in. Anthony Davis has not been that caliber of player, particularly, you know, trying to lead an offense. And LeBron, like, single-handedly carried them to a win over the Suns, who are playing really well. Like, LeBron's actually looking good. And the guy we all thought was going to be great, the one that we all unanimously had as a top-10 player, is, you know, not been that.
He's 30. Davis is 30. LeBron is 39. If this isn't the year where Davis is better than LeBron, it's not going to happen until LeBron retires. That's just what it is. It's like, this was the year that take was going to be valid. And, like, to be fair, in the Phoenix game, AD did still drop 30 points. I think 19 of them were in the second half. Is that right? Yeah, 19 of them were in the second half. So, like, I know LeBron got them over the hump at the end, but Davis still provided 13 fourth quarter points. Like, it was a good game for Davis. But, yeah, it's every other day Davis, day to Davis on will he be healthy, will he be active. I mean, we haven't had health scares yet, but we have the low level of activity. Will he decide to contest a three-point shot? Will he just hang back in the lane and give up wide open three after wide open three? I'm frustrated.
We're dealing with very small sample sizes, so like the numbers are really funky. But do you want to guess LeBron's on-off difference by cleaning the glass net rating? Lakers with LeBron versus off?
Nate, I'm going to have to abstain because I just checked that.
Okay.
He's been bringing it up in every post-game session of like when they lost the first game, he's like, well, I was plus seven, which I think, was he plus seven? Is that correct for the first game?
I just got the net rating on off, but
okay.
But yeah, go with the process, but whatever you're thinking, go higher.
I think the last one was like plus 15. So I think what, plus 22?
Do you want to drop it, Aaron?
It's per 100 possessions, plus 43.4.
Oh, I was thinking his net plus minus. God, that's so many.
Plus, yeah.
Davis is minus 4.3.
Yeah, that seems about right.
They're kind of below average with Davis, and they're like the best team in the league with LeBron, and it's like LeBron is like 40. LeBron, I mean, you're looking at him now. I don't think, and we all understand this, he can't do this every single day, but or even the entire game anymore, but there are flashes where he's still bigger, stronger, faster, better than everyone else. It's just disappointing. It's just disappointing seeing this team rely so heavily on him again. I do want to touch on, because we didn't mention this at all, and I could have mentioned this for the, I thought they'd be disappointing, but they are good. I think the Suns look pretty good. Do you guys want to talk about the Suns for a little bit? Like, they haven't even had Beal, and I still feel like Booker is just a fucking flamethrower. KD has had, the numbers aren't fantastic, but you can still tell he's getting to his spots and knocking his shots down. But the Nurkic piece is like, holy shit, guy is like a center that tries and cares and like rebounds and screens. Like, that's like 90% of what makes just a replacement level center good. And like, without Aiden, their hustle is just is so much better. And even Eric Gordon's kind of playing. You know, the shooting stats aren't there because he was like 3 of 15 the first game. But he's out there, and I'm kind of into the Suns experience. Maybe not for the whole season, but at least for now.
I came in with the take of I actually liked the Suns' role players, you'll remember. And I feel like that's been somewhat validated. I don't like the fit of the big three, but we haven't seen the fit of the big three. We've seen them play without Booker in two of the games, and we've seen them play without Beal in all three. But each of the kind of role players have stepped up. And in that first game against Golden State, they won off of Grayson Allen tip out, a Josh Okogie offensive rebound, a Eric Gordon defensive stop up in the, like, he just completely shut Wiggins down in the mid post. Like, these, they all had really big fourth quarter moments. And I kind of worry that when you get Booker and Beal back, and you have all three of them in your closing lineup, that you're not going to have those defensive moments or those let me crash the offensive boards. But I've really liked how those guys have looked for them. Even Goodwin. Goodwin had a lot of good moments. He's getting picked up in a lot of fantasy leagues I'm in right now.
The fantasy measuring stick, the true calculation of a player's value.
Listen, we are in a, you and I, Dylan didn't want to join us. We're in a 20 person deep fantasy league, which is complete sickos. He was already drafted in that league. But like, I'm also in some leagues with friends that are like, you know, more, hey, we enjoy the games. The guys love the sport and watch the game. I'm trying to move away from the term casual. I think it's just too dismissive. Like, these guys will sit around and play, like, do you remember what college this guy from like 20 years ago went to? So like, more than casuals, but like, not the Jordan Goodwin level. Not the guys that are like, hey, Jordan Goodwin has a chance to really contribute. They're noticing him and picking him up. I think it's a rise. He's elevating his status into the atmosphere, into the like, the in between sickos and casual, whatever that like mid-tier, like, people who have a healthy relationship with sports and basketball. And like,
so not like us.
Healthy sports fans. Us. Yes.
We are very unhealthy.
Yeah.
That's the test of if your fantasy league is a league of sickos, is if Goodwin got drafted, then you know that you're you've got some serious players.
The Suns have been so good defensively, the fourth best defense so far, and like, I like the Grayson Allen fit. Like, I just feel like they have some dogs, man. That their dog per 36 numbers. Like, Booker is just a maniac, and they have a lot of energy and intensity.
Dylan, who was your, I thought they would be good, but they actually kind of suck?
Mine was Anthony Davis, but...
Oh, man. So we all just put the Lakers?
Triple Lakers. Yeah. Triple Lakers. That's just brutal.
We're all
That's
on the same page.
Do a segment and keep the pod rolling.
I really should have doubled down on my natural instinct that the Lakers are overrated. Like, I've let myself be fooled into believing that they'd be better than the Clippers, but they're never better than the Clippers. Like, come on.
That reminds me, because I saw your comment, Dylan. Aaron, did you see my video today about the barbecue series?
I haven't. I have not. Barbecue
series. Okay. So Atlanta and Charlotte apparently play each other for a trophy every year. They have a Southern rivalry. It's called the Battle of the South, both or the Barbecue Series, and they play each other for a little piglet trophy that goes back and forth between the two of them.
That's cool.
Just an ultimately meaningless thing, but I post that. Dylan's like, we need one for LA. Like, we need a battle for LA. Whoever wins the regular series gets this completely meaningless trophy.
No, meaningful trophy. It's an important trophy. I'm kind of into that. Over the off season, I saw a lot of, when I had the Lakers under the Warriors in the standings, the comment I saw the most on my post was the Lakers literally got better and they're still below the Warriors, the team that they beat. And first of all, beating a team in a series in a regular season finish, not the same thing. I'm just, you know, the shit shuffle continues to haunt the Lakers, and I'm just going to make t-shirts with that on it.
Please do.
Yeah. Thank you. It'll be like, shit shuffle and like little pictures of like Carmelo and Tyson Chandler and Taurean Prince and like swapping like some arrows, like swapping them out for D'Angelo Russell and Russell Westbrook.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to make that now. God damn it.
Do it. We'll create a merch shop and we'll start selling t-shirts.
If I had any experience or ability to do that, I'd be on it, but I might have to outsource my ideas.
On meaningless trophies, in New Zealand provincial rugby, we have this thing called the Ranfurly Shield, which is like, you know, there's the main competition, but then you can also win as part of like the regular season, the Ranfurly Shield. And the unique thing about it is that to win it, it's like every game that you play against the person that currently holds it is a game for the shield. And so you can only win it by playing the team that has it, and then you become the carrier.
Wow. That's cool.
And so you could do that with like either it could be like a Lakers Clippers thing, and it's like, you know, you go back and forth, maybe, you know, you're swapping the shield back and forth, or you could do it like a division thing, and you know, you with all these teams that are facing each other constantly, you have this sort of division shield where like, oh, now the Kings beat the Lakers and now they've got the shield, but they're going against the Clippers and they'll be for the shield. There's ideas.
I like that. It kind of reminds me of, I forget what it's called, But there's always a Reddit post like at the end of the year where there's like the by proxy champion, or where you can follow it, like the, you know, the Nuggets beat the Lakers, you beat this team and that team. And it's always, you know, it's never like the actual champion. It's just like the Hawks are your 2024 proxy championship because they beat all the teams in order, basically. They were the final piece of that puzzle. Mm-hmm. You can do a whole league wide, the Shield, and just change his hands.
So it starts with the champion. Yeah. Or whoever helped, and then whoever beats them gets it, and then you have to beat them to take the trophy. It's an interesting concept.
Yeah.
MSU and University of Michigan have the Paul Bunyan Trophy, which is an American folklore hero of this just lumberjack. And every time we play them, one of us takes home this trophy. Just alternate it back and forth. Whoever's the winner gets this trophy of a lumberjack. It's very Midwest.
Paul Bunyan the goat. The greatest lumberjack of all time. Undisputed.
Drop a tree with a single arm.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
All right. Well, who was someone I thought blank would be good, but they're even better than I thought?
I'm going to cheat. It's a boring answer, but I thought Denver would be really good. Like,
that's exactly what
good.
I was going to say.
Thank you, Dylan. I'm glad you agree. And like, I had like 53 wins or something. They're fucking awesome. They're 3-0 right now. They've had bad games and they still win fine. Jokic was horrible against Memphis and they still snuck out that win. They beat the Thunder earlier today by like 30, just whooped on them. I think like 60 wins is in the cards. I thought it would be closer to 50, but they might get there. Like, that's just, they have their system, they have their guys. Their bench is thin, but it seems plenty capable, and Jokic is just awesome.
Yeah. And to be slightly different, I'll say not the Nuggets, but Nikola Jokic. We kind of had the idea that like maybe he would coast the season. You know, he's got the championship. Mm-hmm. He's never really a super motivated guy. But he's just come out and like gone even harder than normal and just like continuing to just like destroy teams.
My answer for this, when I was prepping for this and when I came up with this segment and whole thought process, was the Oklahoma City Thunder. They came out, they had a great start. This was a really good answer when I prepped this segment at like 10 o'clock this morning. Then I went out to lunch, I had a nice burger, laid out on the couch, watched a little primetime 3:30 game where the Thunder just got their asses kicked.
Don't be shy. That's still a good answer. That's still a totally fine answer for OKC.
It's a fine answer, but it just kind of, it feeds into your guys' answer of like, hey, I had Denver as the one seed. I had OKC as the four seed, and Denver just rolled through OKC like they were nothing. Like they were trash. Like they were the Houston Rockets. Like it was just such an easy victory that. I don't even know. I got to recalibrate all my thoughts. And they're doing all of the things that I wanted them to try to do this year. I was like, well, maybe Denver takes a step back and they try to mix up their lineups instead of just playing the starting five all the time. Jokic was out there with Peyton Watson. They looked great together. He was out there with Reggie Jackson. Reggie Jackson should have been in my, I thought they would suck, but he's actually been pretty good. Him or Ben Simmons had very low expectations for both of them. They've been solid. But I think there are a couple of other interesting options for this. I mean, the Nuggets are the absolute juggernaut, easy answer. But I think the Warriors with Chris Paul, I thought that was going to be good. I didn't think it was going to be this good. I think him playing with Clay looked really fun. But in their last game, Clay's off-ball movement, him pounding the rock. But the just Chris Paul and Curry, no Clay on the floor, Curry's running around like crazy, like a demon. Paul is doing some off-ball, or not off-ball, he's doing some away-from-Curry action, pick and roll or something, and then finds Curry. It looks really good and really fun.
And Chris Paul fits in great with what the Warriors do, and I think he doesn't fit the cutting and all that, but he can find the cutters. And when I saw against the Suns, Chris Paul doing his, like, elbow jumper thing that he did, he's done for the past 18 years. But while he's doing that, like Clay's coming off a down screen, and I'm like, oh my god, like that, like I didn't even, like these two like completely separated concepts all of a sudden right on top of each other, like Warriors off ball movement and like Chris Paul doing that little fucking curl thing he does, you know, right at the free throw line into that jumper that he always seems to make.
Mm-hmm.
That's when I understood, like, okay, like this whole, these these two things work together. They got the first game of the season, they did get smoked on the boards, but no Draymond Green. They kind of got bullied. I think with Draymond, that Nurkic game isn't as great, and maybe the Warriors do win that one, but I've been into the Warriors. I thought they were going to be good, and they seem fine. They smoked my Kings. They rolled us up and smoked us, so
yeah,
kind of embarrassing.
There was a moment where Sabonis just like looked helpless. Like, what do I do? Because Chris Paul would get into the mid-range. He's like, I can't step out on this. Or, you know, Curry would be involved in off-ball action. It's like, am I supposed to chase him and drop back to protect for Chris Paul? It was just, he got trapped in no man's land way too many times. And it wasn't like a Sabonis particularly looked bad. Like, he's unathletic. He can't get there like he has in the past. But it was just like a particular, this offense is moving so fluidly and has so many weapons that no one could do anything.
Yeah. Chris Paul's like entire career has been, you know, making centers look dumb. Like, he destroys Rudy Gobert. He destroys anyone that switch, essentially. So it's not a knock on Sabonis. This is what Chris Paul's been doing for, you know, 15 years.
Seriously. I made a video a while back talking about how, like, before it was Steph, that, like, when he got the switch, it was like, oh, what's he going to do to Clint Capella or somebody? It was Chris Paul. Like, Chris Paul just hunted centers all game long, screen after screen after screen, until there was some lumbering giant in front of him. And just, even in Houston, like, as late as Houston, that's all that he was, like, the best ISO scorer in the league in, like, 2018 or something, by points per possession. And that's just what he was so good at. I also should have tossed out my, I thought that'd be good, but it's disappointing, to Kevin Huerter, averaging 3.5 points on 21% shooting. Maybe he'll turn it around, but tough start so far.
Maybe he should get his twin on the team. That guy looks just like him. It was a pretty good three-point shot.
Yeah, 10% three-point shooting, hasn't taken a free throw yet. His leash just isn't as long this season, and I won't derail with Kings talk all too much, but he started both games, played like shit, got pulled pretty quickly, doesn't finish the game. I don't think Vezenkov is the fit, because he's more of a forward. But I really don't want Malik Monk starting. But you might see something else, a different look.
Davion Mitchell.
I think Duarte is going to start. It's going to be Duarte. Duarte's been better. The numbers don't tell you that. But he's so much better defensively.
I saw Duarte hit the side of the backboard. And like, LeBron, it wasn't the close
shit too. LeBron did that too in game one. All right.
Yeah, but here's the thing: LeBron puts up enough shots; it's gonna happen. Duarte, you get in there, you get a couple of shots. Like, man, your leash is not long enough to be making that mistake.
What are Duarte's numbers looking like? Just
whatever they are, not good enough to be making that make. Or yeah, that
he'll miss. Start. He'll be fine. He's gonna start. All right, I'll leave it there.
Dylan, do you have any thoughts on the Clippers?
Yeah, I mean, like, they're pretty much what we expected, right? Russell Westbrook's been interesting, though. I continue to finally come around from my, you know, career-long hatred of Russell Westbrook. Like, just dude, Russell Westbrook, fucking awesome.
Just had to get him a Clippers jersey, now you're a fan.
Exactly, man. But also, like, he's finally done what, like, he would never do. Like, have you seen his stats this year? The dude is averaging, like, an efficient 7 points. Like, he's not out there shooting the Clippers out of games. He's taking 6 shots a game. The offense is elite when he's on. He's passing, he's rebounding, like always.
I watched them play Utah, and I just felt like he was like a super Bruce Brown one almost, which is what we've always wanted him to be. Yeah. But it was like, let me rebound, let me cut, and let me move the ball.
Yeah, and that kind of fits into where the Clippers like to play, where at their best, it was that 5-out lineup with, you know, Terrence Mann and Nick Batum. And they pretty much closed with that in that Utah game, where they had Batum at the 5, if you can call it that, but really Russell Westbrook's the 5, and then you do really get all those benefits of, I mean, like, Kelly Olynyk was guarding him, so he was being guarded by the center as well. Like, he was out there just literally playing center, and you get all the advantages of him being a downhill player.
In my mind, I was calling Paul George the 5, because Paul George was guarding Kelly a fair amount. So I wasn't quite sure how I felt about Paul, which is why I wanted to ask you about the Clippers. Because, like, he had 36 points. It was a relatively efficient, decent game. But I felt like he had no lateral movement in his body. Like, he'd blow past a guy, or he'd, like, drop shoulder or go into a guy. And he'd get to the 6 feet away and either lay it up or, you know, do a little shot from there. But I don't know. I didn't feel like he had any of the the lateral movement or any of like the herky jerky movement that I've seen from him. It was like a lot of straight line drives. And so I was kind of wondering if that was the same things you were seeing, or if you caught their other game, if he looked any better. But it was weird because it was like good, but it wasn't as fluid as I expected.
Not something that stood out to me in the other games. But like, he always has been like a tough shot taker. You know, like he's never really been a player that tries to get all the way to the rim. Like, he shoots a lot of mid-range and a lot of floaters. But one thing that I like from him this year is he's finally getting to the fucking free throw line. Like, this dude averages like 4 free throws on his career, and he's finally getting there.
I wanted to note, before we got too far away from the Russ Westbrook experience, it's kind of a double-edged sword because we didn't have him in the top 100, but for the reasons that he might be in the top 100 now are not the reasons anyone would have said prior to the season starting. So those who were like, that's fucking stupid, Russ is a top 50 player, the people who thought that were not thinking it because he was going to take 6 shots a game and just rebound and facilitate really well. The rest of Western experience has been good, and I could totally imagine like him being on my team, and just, he's so into it. He's hype, and he hypes the crowd up, and he's a good teammate, at least in a attitude wise. But he did take that game-winning shot attempt that brought Kawhi to his knees. Just took the life out of him, which is funny to see. Yeah, no, I made a video saying I think I'd eat batteries or something if Russell Westbrook played until age 38. He's pushing there. He's going to push it, man.
Aaron, you can't keep making promises to eat things. You literally, like, I'm going to buy a Raptors ticket and eat it if they go to the playoffs. I'm going to buy a DeAndre jersey and eat it.
I never was going to eat a jersey. Tickets or paper, batteries would kill me, but I was pretty confident that Westbrook was not getting to age 38.
He was willing to put his life on the line for that.
He's 34 right now. He's about to turn 35. I still have a couple more seasons.
you got a few more years to live.
My betting styles are just so different. Like,
you think he'll be in the league at 38?
Yeah.
Mate's like, I'll put 38? My house on it. Aaron's like, I will consume battery acid.
No. I
was a drink battery acid or eat batteries. I forget what I was going to do.
Have you ever heard of a consolation bet? It's the idea that, like, you bet on something you don't want to happen. So that way, if it does, like, hey, at least I made money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, like, if the Lakers were playing the Celtics in the championship, I'm going to put $100 on the Celtics.
Yeah.
If the Lakers win, sweet, my team won a championship, I'm happy, life is good. If the Lakers lose, hey, I made $100. Like, it sucks, my team didn't win, but at least I have this $100 that I'm all or I didn't nothing. Have.
All or nothing. Put my life on the line.
You're like double down. You're like, not only does this guy suck and I hate him, but I'm willing to kill myself if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Essentially, that's how you gotta make out. You gotta. I blaze my own path. Age 38 Westbrook in the NBA won't happen.
Oh my god. We had one more storyline that I at least wanted to touch on, which is the absolute collapse, the panic button needs to be pressed meter for the Memphis Grizzlies. And yeah, they are 0-3 with the most recent loss coming to the Washington Wizards. I don't think Bismack Biyombo is enough to satisfy things here, but how are we feeling?
They looked worse than I anticipated. I first had them as a 50 win, like 3 seed. And then I was like, okay, 46 wins, take it or leave it. And then when the Steven Adams injury happened, I was just out. Like, not interested. Like, this team isn't deep enough to handle that. And they still have the Ja suspension. 40 wins. I still think it'll be about 40 wins. Like, I'm not totally panicking, but Desmond Bane as your first option doesn't look as good without Tyus Jones helping to run the show. Jaren Jackson really can't create his own shot. And the team just isn't as deep. But I kind of liked, I'm forgetting his name, Xavier Tillman? No, Zaire Williams. Is he the other? Yeah, I kind of liked him. Like, he seemed pretty fun as, like, a shot-creating, big, bigger guard. He was getting minutes against Washington. Washington also is, like, one of the worst teams in the league. They have a lot of players that I kind of like, but they still are, like, the Kyle Kuzma and Jordan Poole show. So a loss to them after what the Pacers whooped them by, like, 40. Dropped 140 points on them opening night. Not great for Memphis. And obviously, they're the 0-3, 15th seed.
Yeah, I don't think that we put numbers on it, you and I, Nate, but we discussed it when the Steven Adams injury happened, that this was catastrophic for the Grizzlies. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of coming that way. Like, I did consider bringing them up as a team that we thought were going to be good, but suck. But when the Adams injury happened, we said, like, this is going to be really hard for them to overcome. Xavier Tillman actually has looked interesting, though. I do like him getting more minutes. He had some really good games, I think, against the Warriors in the playoffs. It's that same effect that we were talking about. Like, Steven Adams is the guy that adds so much value, but then also when Xavier Tillman becomes your starter and, you know, Jake LaRavia then has to play 15 minutes a game, like, it gets rough. Derrick Rose is looking just as washed as he did last year.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It doesn't help that Santi Aldama is also hurt. Like, we knew Brandon Clark wasn't going to be back for a while because I think it was a torn ACL. Was it ACL or MCL? I don't know which, but, you know, you've been without him and now Steven Adams. And then, like, Santi got starting minutes last year at times and was the part-time starter and now is also hurt. So, like, you have lost three of your probably five front court players. And like, they're signing Bismack Biyombo, who I think he's going to take over that starting role, if not the first week, then the second week he's there. Because Tillman is nice, but Tillman is a nice, like, let me come in and provide a burst of energy in limited minutes guy, as opposed to someone that I really want to rely on as a full-time starter.
When I posted my video about the Grizzlies and adjusting their record from 46 wins to 40 wins, there's a bunch of comments like, Adams is really worth 6 wins? And I'm like, yeah, yes, he is. It's probably more than that. And looking at it now, just because of everything Nate just mentioned, it's not just Adams. It's the players that you have to replace his minutes with who just simply aren't as good. Xavier Tillman is, he's pretty good.
Hey, if everyone else was healthy and you just lost Steven Adams, yeah, that's probably like a 1-2 loss difference, or maybe even 3. I mean, I really love Steven Adams and everything that he does. Was with his screen setting, his hustle, his offensive rebounding is top notch.
His passing is good.
Yeah. But like, if the rest of the team is healthy, you've got Ja out there, you've got everyone else, like, sure, it's fine. It's not the end of the world, but not having him plus everyone else, it just, you're out 4 rotation players and no team is that deep. You have to just play without 4 guys that should be getting minutes. So
Marcus Smart's look good. Not like fantastic, but he was like, yeah, I had some smart stock, and he's 15 points and five assists, 53% shooting, and I'm sure those numbers will adjust to his career average exactly. And this conversation will be pointless in about a month, but so far I like the smart experience, but man, the Wizards smoked him. Like, Corey Kispert came off the bench, looked awesome. The Wizards just seem to have so many pieces that the Grizzlies just didn't have the depth to compete with that. Like, Denny Avdija looked good. Honestly, my least favorite part of the Wizards was Kuzma and Poole. Like, every time they touched the ball, I feel like horrible things happened. Mm. I liked the other guys so much more.
Yeah, like, if you could swap Desmond Bane, or like, keep Bane and Jaren Jackson, but swap the entire rest of the Grizzlies for the Wizards roster, this would be a much more interesting team.
If you combine the Grizzlies and the Wizards, are they a contender?
I mean, they're probably like a top 6 team in the West, at least.
The Grizzwords, I'm almost there. The Grizzwords.
here's the thing. When you say combine them,
yeah,
in my mind, you're just picking off like Kuzma and Poole, and like the rest of it's just still Memphis. And Memphis had the opportunity to try to sign Kuzma or do a sign and trade for Kuzma this offseason, and we're like, we're good, we're okay.
They need that offense.
Yeah, I don't think they have enough top-end talent. And maybe once Ja comes back, if he looks the same, that would all change. But I don't think you could combine those teams and have a contender.
I think the Wizards have a bunch of like good role players.
Tyus Jones. Yeah, bring Tyus Jones back. Tyus Jones,
DeLon Wright is one of the best like guard defenders in the league.
Avdija, Kispert.
Okay, but the rest of Memphis has really solid role players who's out here.
I don't know, man.
Who's the starting five for the Grizzards?
Probably Daniel Gafford.
Gafford, and then Gafford, Jackson, Kuzma, Bane. Who's their point guard? Tyus Jones.
When healthy, Ja. When not healthy, you might start Jones.
Yeah, that's not a contending team still. But
well, Tyus Jones, Marcus Smart, Desmond Bane, Jaren Jackson. And Gafford isn't a good team.
It's a good team, but I still don't know if it's a contending team.
Once you get Jabba,
what's the Sun Kings rule? It's like if you combine two teams of about the same value and they're not a contender, they suck or something? Or is it more...
That was my, like, should you blow it up? If you combine these two teams, they're not a contender. Or if you combine two teams of relatively equal value, they're not a contender, and they don't have young pieces to get better, like, that's when you just absolutely need to blow it up. If double your team isn't able to win, which is what I was looking at Chicago as, and you don't have young prospects.
Like the Timberwolves. Is that a contender? Probably not.
Timberwolves. Yeah, therefore. I would take the two. I like the Timberwolves, LaVine, and do you guys have any, you know, I can't believe we got through a pod where we talked about disappointments and didn't mention the Rockets at all. Any Rockets?
Who's disappointed in them?
Okay.
I had them
like
30 them.
Something, like 32 wins. Like, it's just ugly. It's like every day that goes by, I understand their offseason less and less. Then I'd kind of convince myself that, like, you know, Şengün plus more capable guards and better players. Like, I can't fucking stand watching Van Vliet play. I just really can't.
Really? I had a slightly, like, I watched them play the Spurs and I walked out slightly more positive. There were definitely times where Van Vliet was rough, but there were also times where Van Vliet was really looking to set up Şengün. He had some nice two-man actions.
Şengün
was like, hey, let me do a pick and roll, and then I'm going to bring some guys in, I'm going to kick back, and then Şengün's going to do something. It's definitely a work in progress. It's definitely one of the teams with probably the least amount of continuity. I think they could have brought back everyone they had last year and not had continuity, so like bringing in a whole bunch of new pieces and trying to play them and having just the most dysfunctional team already. I think this is about what I expected from them, and I would expect them to get a little bit better as the season goes on, but yeah, I think 30 wins is still very realistic.
They have Gen Z J.R. Smith and Jalen Green. It's all coming together.
I don't want Fred VanVleet shooting more than Jalen Green. Like, that's the big barometer as to whether this team is playing the way that they should. Is Fred VanVleet taking more shots than Jalen Green?
I don't really want any of them shooting the ball all that much. I just want it to be the Şengün story. just let it be Şengün.
Şengün's shooting will give as much as Jalen Green.
Şengün will give up exactly as many points as he scores. Like, Collins was going at him. I keep wanting to say John Collins, and I said it on TikTok, and people are like, no, that's not the right. So like, I know John Collins is the one with the fucked up fingers in Utah, but I still just watch them like, oh yeah, John Collins. Can we just rename all of them John Collins? Be easier for me.
I'll get on that.
Yeah, perfect.
Maybe you just become a last name guy, Nate. Solve all your issues.
Collins.
It's like Bill Simmons that does that. It's just like, you know, Collins from Atlanta or Collins from San Antonio. You know, it's just a last name from a place.
My bar has to be higher than that. My bar cannot be Bill Simmons on names. That's just such a low bar. It's like...
Yeah. Now, Bill Simmons, like, it's so funny because people will, like, literally, like, tell him how to say it, and he's like, I just can't do it. I'm sorry.
It's just,
on the Rockets. The Rockets signed Jock Landale to 3 years, like, $36 million or something. It's $8 million a year, and he's played 9 minutes.
He's played two more minutes than Boban.
What the fuck was that signing? He's played one of the two games. He played 9 minutes. What was the point of that contract?
You see what happened was one of those games was against the Rockets. Or sorry, one of the games was against the Spurs, and they needed more height, so they had to play Boban instead of Jock Landale, because you had to have a big guy to guard Wembanyama.
Okay, Boban's played 7 minutes. So Landale's played 9. So I just 9 minutes? Okay. I have to go to the bathroom. Can we wrap this up, please?
I think that's a good place to wrap. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Aaron, where can the people find you?
Possible Chairs on TikTok, this podcast all the time.
Dylan, where can the people find you?
On the Hoops Temple podcast, send me your hate mail to hoopstemple@gmail.com.
Perfect. You can find us all here. Find me at on TikTok, Nate_HoopsTemple. Email us hoopstemple@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. Thanks for listening.
You can also find me on the toilet really soon.